You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
with your light. Running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning. I have a little glitch in that program there. I apologize. Good morning, family. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk RadioNetwork.com, and I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hope everything is well with you, brothers and sisters. I'm going to get these glitches fixed. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to do that. That's paramount. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, this point, once again, this program is every Monday and Wednesday and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson, Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursdays at 8 p.m. from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Thursdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney on Sundays from 5 to 6, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan. His program is from 5 to 6 on Sunday. And then right after that, at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba is ready to take another group of our people on a voyage of a lifetime. Take them across the water to the continent. And it's only us. So contact Brother Bomani Tayemba at AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. The African Habesha program, they have programs here in Atlanta, and of course they have a program in Ghana.
Habashaw Works program. So contact HabashawIncorporated.org. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, here on Ralph Debert Abernathy. Across the street from the Soul Vegetarian Restaurant, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Habashaw has a fine selection of smoothies and health foods and dry goods. They have vegan dishes on Saturday and Sunday. They sell beef vegan dishes on Saturday and Sunday. They have a fine selection. So Wadada's. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located on Ralph David Abernathy. Wadada's. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. It's a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, t-shirts, figurines, and so much more. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. If there's a book that you're looking for, she'll probably have it. But if she doesn't, she'll get it for you. That's right. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia. That's east of Atlanta. Take I-20 going east. Exit 74. Take that exit. Make a left after the exit. And now you're on Main Street in Lithonia, headed north. And about a mile down that road, on the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, where Brother Gassimde Ajamu is the proprietor. And give him a call at 770-305-6373. 770-305-6373. There is light in the Black Dot. Jump back in your car, headed back the other direction. Now you're going south, headed back towards I-20. When you get to I-20, make a left again. Now you're still going east. And the next exit is exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Take the exit and make a right. Three lights, make another right. And on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. The new Black Wall Street Market. Yeah. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
In Macon, Georgia. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Brother Baba Abija, he's got it going on, man, because he's got everything. He's got everything you need at the Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Give him a call at 478-256-1166. 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon. He's not open on Mondays. He's open from Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Check them out. Gabriella Aurelia, she's still has the work that she's doing in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Sister Gabby. And go online to Sanjay, SONJE-HAITI.org. Sanjay-HAITI.org, and see for yourself the great work that these young people are doing, that they're doing there. Okay? Check it out. And I'm quite sure if you do, and your objective, you know that's what they need. Baba Barudi and Mama Yah, they canceled their complementarity, or some of the complementarity program this weekend. I know myself, my lady, we're going to be going to ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. I'll have the details on Wednesday and Friday's broadcast. It's going to be in Columbus, Georgia, which is a couple hours away. So right after the program on Friday, I'll be headed to Columbus, Georgia, which is southwest of Atlanta, off of I-85. Columbus, Georgia. 10 years ago when I moved here in 2014, we had an ASCAC conference in Atlanta, and then that Sunday, we took a caravan to Columbus, Georgia, to have a memorial service at the gravesite of the Honorable Nana, Dr. John Henry Clark. Yeah. And, man, I tell you, you know me and you've heard this broadcast many times, you know how I feel about Dr. John Henry Clark. Man, I tell you. So we're going to pay tribute once again to Dr. John Henry Clark, Nana John Henry Clark, on this Sunday. Okay. Today, of course, is the 20th, which is Dr. King's commemorative day. It is the third Monday of January each year, you know, the third Monday of January each year. And, of course, his birthday is the 15th, and, of course, the 15th was last Wednesday, and we talked about Dr. King at length, you know. But before we get off into that, we always get off into the Inyatsisim of daily revolutionary thought. That's right. We're going to get off into the Inyatsisim of daily revolutionary thought. January 19th. Mental bondage divorces the individual from the knowledge inherent in his being that should be used to further his evolution. One in mental captivity looks to another for guidance instead of within. Richard King. Break your mental bondage. Turn off the idiot box. Come out of the mall. Study our story. Explain all the our story you know to those within earshot. Take a potential Asafo. Asafo is a young person, a young warrior. Take a potential Asafo with you to sit down at a Jegna's feet. A Jegna is the word, brothers and sisters, that we must use in place of mentor. We don't use the word mentor. Do the research and find out who mentor was in the Greek story. Odysseus turned his son, Telemachus, because he was going off to fight in the war, turned his young son over to mentor. And mentor sexually abused him. We're talking about the Greeks. There's a lot of homosexuality and pedophilia within that culture still to this day. So we don't use mentor. We use Jegna. Start a month-long book drive for an African-centered school in your neighborhood, in your community. Start an African-centered school. Learn an African language. Find an incarcerated African to write to about his or her vision and African mission. Watch a colony of ants work together, as we should. Develop a family mission statement. Learn to sew and cook without machines. Organize for the protection of a warrior elder. Be grateful for being given such an enormous responsibility. Study a survival manual. Speak with your ancestors. Volunteer an hour a week with a family homeschooling their children to assist them. Pay off credit cards and don't again use or replace it. Learn a manual skill that would be beneficial to our community. Whatever that skill might be, painting, carpentry, auto mechanics, just fixing something, whatever it is. Take up martial arts. Build an independent business. Speak to the wind about the assistance we need for our work. Start a book or journal that will help transform menticide into consciousness. Plant the seeds of your favorite vegetable. Camp out for the weekend. Break from your bondage and invite someone to come with you. Break from your bondage and invite someone to come with you. Affirm, I look inside African wisdom for guidance. Affirm, I look inside for African wisdom and guidance. January 20th. It is quite easy to shout slogans to sign manifestos. But it is quite a different matter to build, manage, command, spend days and nights seeking the solutions to problems. The honorable ancestor who we talked about this past week and who was assassinated in the Congo, Patrice Lumumba. If you are adverse to hard, thankless, selfless work, you are reading the wrong book, I say. You see, what we have here are words whose only purpose is the work of nation building. If this could be done without an utterance, there would be none. There would be none. As Patrick Lumumba, an incomparable man who was assassinated, murdered by unconscionable aliens and their emasculated, power-hungry pets for leading his viciously colonized people to a brink of independence, said, "It is one thing to shout, write, and protest. It's one thing to shout, write, and protest. And quite another to gather the courage to make it time to do whatever is necessary to enforce truth, justice, righteousness, and order. This is the challenge in this days of conversation, debate, and argumentation, where we have been convinced that being seen is far more important than being so involved in your work that you don't have the time or inclination to look around to see who is in awe. Your words without actions are taken as sufficient to change our reality into an African one. This is not the work of the weak, easily distracted, the needy, the selfish individuals. It is the work of warriors, family. It is the work of brothers and sisters who are committed to make the transformation from us being in this madness to being self-determining, independent, liberated, and sovereign. Affirm, I am not averse to hard work, often thankless, selfless work. I am not averse to hard, often thankless, selfless work. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yeah, I tell you. Today, of course, is the commemoration day of Dr. King, the third Monday in January. I remember, you know, getting petitions signed. I did a lot of work for Dr. King's birthday to be a national holiday, you know. And it was just around that time Stevie Wonder made the song, too. Dr. King's birthday song. This is early 80s, very early 80s. And that special Monday at Dr. King Center, at the Dr. King Center, where WNOV radio and another radio program and the newspaper all in accordance with getting the word out and getting brothers and sisters to sign the petition from many individuals like myself who combed our neighborhoods to get the signatures to bring them all to. And Dexter King, he's an ancestor. Dexter King died a few years ago of cancer. Dexter King was in attendance. Mary Ellen Shad Strong, Gerald Jones, the owner of WNOV and Courier Communications, was his mother, who was a dynamic individual. And she was also in attendance at that time. So it's the early 80s. And then it happened. And, of course, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was in office when it happened, you know. Yeah. So, So his birthday was a year after that, or two, year or two after that, that it was made a national holiday, the third Monday. And sometimes that day may fall on the 15th, very seldom. But this is also the inauguration of the presidency of the United States. And there's a big thing amongst us as the people to say, hey, you know, in fact, let me pull that up. Because they don't want you to watch anything, because they know that narcissistic, weak-ass Trump would love to brag about how big. In fact, many people are saying how they did that piece where he's sitting next to Barack at Jimmy Carter's funeral. And what he says to Barack is, I know you know that my crowd size was bigger than, because there's no doubt about it. He was infatuated with crowd. He's so narcissistic. He has to have the best, the biggest, this, that, and the other. And you've seen this many times. This man, this idiot. Man, tell us how you really feel, Baba Oshie. Yeah. Tell us how you really feel. Let me see if I can pull that up. Yeah. You know. So and it's funny how this man is so obsessed. And really, if I can't pull it up,
here. Are you going to admit that my crowd sizes were bigger than yours?
Man, you wish. What are you really trying to compensate for?
Just ask Fox News, they'll tell you.
The only thing bigger on you, Donald, is your mouth.
I can't believe that idiot actually showed up.
Poor Obama has to sit next to that clown for the whole service.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably bigger than him?
No, no.
How do you know?
No, no.
Is there something you're not telling me?
And then, of course, Bush comes in and he ignores him. Then he has a, says something about that. Donald Trump, man, what an idiot. But there were aerial views of the inauguration of Barack Obama and Donald Trump. Clearly, the aerial views show. But he is such a ferocious liar, you know, and the people that he has around him help substantiate his lies. I remember when his press secretary, and he got up on the mic and said, Donald Trump's crowd size was the largest crowd size, period. Of course, you know, if somebody says it like that so emphatically, it's an exclamation. That's it. Period. It's the largest crowd size in the history of man. Period. I tell you, family, this is ridiculous. This is unbelievable. This is so ridiculous. You know? I tell you, it's bad. That's why I'm going to talk a little bit later after the break about the Exodus. Because I've been meaning to say that, but let me just go ahead and do what I'm going to do. Right now, I'm going to do a little thing here. Because let me play this about Dr. King, his last speech. Been to the mountaintop, his last words that he spoke before he was assassinated the next day. are preparing to go to the march in Memphis for the sanitation workers and assist those brothers in what they were doing, you know. I tell you. And let me just say this. Dr. King was not a weak man. He was a Christian man, very deep into that. And of course, being such, there's a belief that other Christians, you can, you know, use your moral persuasion. And that's what he failed to understand. He was, you know, he kept believing, because there were some Caucasians that assisted him. And these individuals showed him that, you know, that it could possibly be happen that the minds of Caucasians would change and we would be able to share in this country, you know. And I think all of us know now that will never happen. And that's why we're going to talk about the Exodus after this break, because that'll never happen. And the Exodus never happened. But we need an Exodus. Okay. All right, brothers, this is Dr. King's last words.
We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. Nothing would be more tragic than to stop at this point in Memphis. I want to thank God once more for allowing me to be here with you. I left Atlanta this morning and then I got into Memphis. And some began to say the threats, or talk about the threats that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Tonight, I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And another emotional speech by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King at Mason's Temple, Church of God in Christ in Memphis. On April 3rd, 1968. And I know that what he told Harry Belafonte, that he was kind of saying, hey, I need to change this up. Because as hard as I tried to appeal to the rational and the philosophical side of these white folks, these people in power, to do what's right, it is not in them. So I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. I'm trying to integrate my people with the people who are cold and callous and indifferent and selfish and greedy. It's not going to happen. So Dr. King realized that, hey, it's not going to happen, so I might as well put my people in another direction. Start talking about economics. It's fine for the Caucasians, integrating lunch counters and having the ability to sit on the same toilet seat that crackers sit on, But when you're talking about economics, the equity of economics, you've gone too far. You will never be equal here. This society, just as what is being said today by many Caucasians, this is Trump's America. This society is a white man's America. Black people can't be American. You can be in a society, but you can't be in America, because American is synonymous with being white, with being European, with being Caucasian, being Urugu. And that is selfish. That is selfish. That is greedy. Let me play this particular piece. This is a Keith Boykins, a lot of stuff. There was one Keith Boykins piece that I couldn't find, where he talks about Donald Trump and his history of racism, his history of indifference. From the time that he was with his father and not renting to us, from the time that he had his casinos, the time that he wanted to execute the Central Park Five, even after they were exonerated, he still wanted to do it. He was still insistent. Prior to the election of Barack Hussein Obama, adamantly trying to find his birth certificate to prove that he could not run for president, that he was born in Kenya when he was born in Hawaii, the 50th state of this union. And then all the other crazy stuff that he has done and said. I couldn't find that piece, but I found another piece. Because I'm going to play this because we're going to get off. This is, of course, another thing that happened this weekend was presidential pardons on the way out the door. Many presidents begin to pardon individuals and so forth, people who are in prison. One of the interesting pardons was a pre-pardon, so to speak, of those who had challenged Trump. Fauci, Liz Cheney, there's another person in that mix, so they would be immune or they've been given a pre-pardon, so Donald Trump can't go after them with his retribution. But this particular piece, of course, is that I wish... I was naive about Barack Obama, and I think we all are. We all were under the perceptions because, thinking that he was in Chicago, doesn't matter. When you're in America and you're seeking these offices, you are influenced by the idea. Your brother and sister is just for a show. It ain't real. Because I ain't lying. I'm just how naive I was. I said, damn, they might celebrate Kwanzaa in the White House. They might have a Kanaro or some Meshuma Saba, the Kagumbe Chaya Moja, all that. No, brothers and sisters, when you go for the United States presidency, you bid. You are bidding to do the work of the predominance of the United States, which is European, Caucasian, white folks. This is theirs. You speak on their behalf. You might argue there were some things that were done during Barack Obama's administration that were, but no, nothing specific. Just like even Kamala Harris said, no, I ain't gonna do nothing special for black folks. No, I ain't doing nothing. Yeah. So, I was hoping that Marcus Garvey would be pardoned under Barack Obama. He didn't do it. Hell, Trump pardoned Jack Johnson. Didn't know he was dead. Yeah, Jack Johnson, he's still doing great work. Trump is an idiot. I don't know who got him to pardon Jack Johnson, but that was cool. And, of course, Biden pardoned Marcus Garvey. From what I understand, there were a number of people who pressed upon Biden to do so, to pardon Jack Johnson. To pardon Marcus Garvey, excuse me. And should have been done. J. Edgar Hoover. I don't want to definitely not get off into his ass. Cross-dressing ass. And, of course, the supposedly members of his family who are American, African, about exposing his ass to being black. And, of course, people like him who definitely don't profess to being black and definitely does not identify with being black shows a true indifference or really a hatred towards. You know, just like some of the homosexuals who, particularly when homosexuality was in the, quote, closet, they fought hard, just like, you know, they fought hard against homosexuality and homosexuals. And, of course, he was one as well, cross-dresser. And so he imprisoned Marcus Garvey on mail fraud, the same thing he did to Callie House. I don't think he did that because I think Callie House was before that. I know he was just getting in to that bureau. There wasn't even the FBI at that time. You know, this is the early 1920s that this happened. And they put him away for a few years here in Atlanta. He was in the federal prison here in Atlanta. Then he got out and he was deported. But here's Keith Boykins.
President Biden has pardoned legendary civil rights leader Marcus Garvey, a Jamaican immigrant born in 1887 who settled here in Harlem. As we commemorate MLK weekend, remember that Dr. King was inspired by Marcus Garvey and praised him as the first man of color in the United States to lead and develop a mass movement. Instead of celebrating the inauguration of a white convicted felon who attacked Jamaica as a shithole country, let us take a moment to remember this iconic black hero. On this side behind me, Marcus Garvey reportedly held his first public meeting in the United States. Garvey also launched the Black Star Line, the first black-owned shipping company, which he hoped would allow African Americans to return to their homeland. And he founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association to promote the goal of black nationalism and led the Back to Africa movement. But Garvey's movement threatened some powerful white Americans, and notorious FBI leader J. Edgar Hoover targeted him. Garvey was convicted on politically motivated charges of mail fraud in 1923. 100 years later, his legacy and family will now see some semblance of justice. On his last full day in office, President Biden also pardoned Don Scott, the first black House Speaker of Virginia, immigrant rights activist Ravi Ragbar, gun violence prevention advocate Daryl Chambers, and criminal justice reform advocate Kemba Smith Pradia, who was the subject of a years-long media campaign in the 1990s after she was swept up in the so-called war on drugs for crimes that her boyfriend committed. Biden also commuted the sentences of two other people, Robin Peoples and Michelle West. And after commuting the sentences of nearly 2,500 people convicted of nonviolent drug offenses on Friday, Biden now holds the record for most individual pardons and commutations issued by any president. And this is important. While MAGA tries to convince gullible Americans that the U.S. legal system is somehow rigged against a rich and powerful white man who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, let us honor the real martyrs who were targeted by their government, imprisoned for advocating for their people, swept up in the mass incarceration era, and denied justice for decades. American justice has never been biased against wealthy white men. It's always targeted the poor, the vulnerable, the people of color, and their leaders. All throughout history, these have been the real victims of America's racially biased criminal justice system, not a rich white guy from Queens.
I say. So we're going to, okay, we got plenty of time. If anybody wants to chime in on this particular piece, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. There's a number you already in the queue. You hit star twice. And you want to talk about Marcus Garvey? You want to talk about Martin Luther King? That's interesting, huh? Some people, they were miles apart. No, they were together. It's just like all the others. And I know that Dr. King, more so Brother Malik Shabazz at his waning years, because he was out of the Nation of Islam, and he wanted to make that kind of fundamental change. He was willing to, as he said, I'm willing to work with anybody, you know, who is willing to work with me in changing the dynamics that affect our people. And although that T-shirt that I wear when I leave town, it's a T-shirt that a good friend, Brother Ron Pounds, right before I moved here, sold me. This T-shirt, family, is well over 20-something years old. And the screen of it still looks good. We stand together. Because imagine if Dr. King and Malcolm, they would have lived and stood together and helped the brothers and sisters that were working with them, that they understood that it wasn't about what religion that we practice. It wasn't about being Christian or Muslims or any religion. It was about us being African. That they came together and worked on that and got others around the world to work on that, particularly Africans around the world to work on that. And then, of course, to galvanize Africans on the continent to really make an African union strong and in terms of what it must be and should be and could be, instead of the damn weak ass. The African Union so damn weak. They let those crackers, let them change the name of African Liberation Day to Africa Day. I'm so pissed at that. Africa Day. You know, damn Africa Day. It's African Liberation Day. But them crackers. So, imagine if that would have happened. You know? That picture is taken the time, the only time they really met. Although there is a play called The Meeting, where Dr. King and Malcolm are in a hotel room and they're talking about it. In fact, the first person I think that was in that play was Denzel playing Malcolm. I can't remember that one brother who's an actor. I can see his face, but I don't remember his name. He played King. And they were going back and forth about this, that, and even had that arm arm wrestling, you know. No, they didn't meet. That was the only time they ever met. They took that picture both smiling, you know, standing next standing next to each other. But that's the thing. When you make a move to challenge this system, you better make that move strongly, because the people in charge of this system will take you out. They will take you out. And then you hear about Dr. King and how he was assassinated. And the belief is that he was not assassinated by a lone gunman, James Earl Ray. There was no doubt. And Dexter King really pushed that issue. And Judge Joe Brown assisted in that. That the government admitted that, yes, they were also complicit in the assassination of Dr. King. Supposedly, he was not dead when he got him to the hospital. And supposedly, that he was suffocated. That's what it said. I don't know. Yeah. These are some evil people we dealing with, family. I know you know this. These are some really evil people that we're dealing with. And so we really must prepare to get out of here, because there ain't a damn thing we can do. Nothing really has fundamentally changed. Okay, yes, there's a few of us, because they understood that we're going to let a few. There ain't going to be no deep fundamental change for African people, for black people. This is not theirs. This is ours. And we must control it. We ain't going to let them dictate to us. Okay, you got your marches. You got your, you know, all the little stuff. But I don't give a damn about that. This is ours. And now, the disparity between people, particularly even with Caucasians, you have all these billionaires, all these oligarchs. They're going to be at the inauguration. They ain't being outside. They up front. They're going to be right there up front. All the people who wanted to go to the inauguration. It's too damn cold. But you can't get inside. I think inside only holds a few hundred people. You ain't going to the ball. Man. Yeah. I don't know anything about Project 2025. I have no idea. This is the most lying son of a bitch in the history of human beings. How could somebody who's so morally bankrupt, and these people voted for him, these people gave him. Brother, we got to get up out of here. This is sanity. This is insane. This is insane. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. This is Winter in America. This is an appropriate song for right now. Gil Scott Heron, Winter in America. Metaphorically and realistically.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
friendly Indians, welcome to pilgrims, and to the buffaloes who once ruled a plain. Like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain. Looking for the rain. Just like the cities that stagger on the coastline, and a nation that just can't stand much more. Like the forest buried beneath the highway, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter. It's winter in America. Yes, and all of the hillers have been killed, sent away. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Winter in America. Save your soul, Lord knows, from winter in America. The Constitution, a noble piece of paper, with free society, struggled but they died in vain. And now democracy is ragtime on the corner, hoping for some rain. It look like either hoping for some rain. And I see the robins perched in barren treetops. They're watching last-ditch races marching across the floor. But just like the peace signs that vanished in our dreams, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter. It's winter in America. And all of the hillers have been killed. Betrayed. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Lord knows it's winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. Save your soul from winter in America. Stick. Been killed, sent away.
nobody knows, nobody knows. And ain't nobody fighting, cause nobody knows what to say.
It is winter in America.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Oh, yes, sir. Man, let me tell you. Winter in America. Cold. Cold, I tell you. In the book Urugu by Marimba Ani, which is to me the Bible, if you want to use that analogy, that book is, although there's African words she uses and other terms and so forth, so if you just kind of pick up on that, but what she is saying consistently is that in the book Urugu, which is an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. We're analyzing them. We're figuring out how they be and why they behave and do the things that they do. They've always done that to us, but not only did they do that to us, they consistently formulated ideas and thoughts that were false, intentionally false. Many things that they've done to us. And of course, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position with us at the lowest position. Caucasians have poisoned the minds of the world. Our minds have been so deeply messed up that we do crazy stuff. We risk many things to be like them. We bleach our skin. We do so many things. And the irony is that they risk skin cancer to look like us. Not necessarily us. They don't want to be us. No, they don't. But they don't want to be pale. You know? They don't want to have no flat ass. Man. So the Exodus in the Bible, as I said before, whenever that time comes around of April, of maybe May, I mean not May, April or March, when that time comes around, you know, yeah, just when that time comes around. Let me see when it's coming around this time. Yeah. Is it April? Yeah, April. April 20th is Easter. April 18th is Good Friday. In between that time, usually that Saturday, they show Ten Commandments. The Cecil B. DeMille version of the Ten Commandments. There's, you know, there's a movie called Exodus with Christian Bale and this Arab-looking dude who's playing Ramesses II. And, of course, cinematically, Lee was a great movie, I guess. Technicolor, since around all that kind of stuff. I've seen it. The reason why I guess I'm still kept it, I've seen it as a young man, a boy. I wasn't even about 12, 13 years old at the time. My uncle, who was living in California, came to Milwaukee to visit. And the one theater was playing it, of course. The movie's long. There was even an intermission. But, of course, you know, on the big screen, the technical, all that kind of bull. And, of course, if you are a Christian, you believe it. Because one of the things that Judaism, which has entrapped the three major religions, that's why they believe that it is historical. And the people who are associated with are historical. I was doing research upon this when I first came on the fire department. That's one thing about the fire department, afforded me the time to do some reading, to do some studying. I'm at the firehouse waiting on the alarm to go off. And so I'm doing some reading and some studying, you know. Also, too, got me a chance to get involved. I became involved in community happenings. I became involved with the Black Firefighters Association, nationally, internationally, locally. So I must say that the fire service has done this, being a part of that. And so I realized early on, and consistently reading a number of things, and so what I did earlier this weekend to do talk about this, put a piece in, is the Exodus historical? Is it real? And of course, you're going to get a lot of different opinions on that, if it is historical or real. You know, you're going to get a lot. And so that's going to be interesting, because no, it's not. It is not real. Oh, I tell you, that's my lady. That's my mom. She comes through for me. That's what you always got to have. Here's a piece of Boykins. Listen to this.
If you look at Donald Trump, the man who would refuse to rent to black people in the 1970s, who tried to lead a lynch mob against five black and brown kids in the 1980s for the Central Park case, who refused to allow black casino workers to have a prominent place in his casinos in Atlantic City in the 1990s, who spent 5.5 years lying about Barack Obama's birth certificate in the 2000s, who came into office and then attacked black people like Colin Kaepernick, who attacked Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss for simply doing their jobs as Fulton County election workers. You dishonor those people when you go and perform for this man who has done nothing but dishonor black people. And just last year, he was calling Haitian immigrants, accusing them of eating cats and dogs. This is not somebody that black people should be associated with and pretending to normalize. We should be challenging him. And it dishonors the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday we honor on Monday to celebrate this man. Mm.
I agree. That's the piece I was looking for. Thank you, dear. Yeah. I agree. And so for those individuals, the ubiquitous Snoop Dogg, he performed along with Nelly at this inaugural piece that they had a couple of days ago. You know, I don't think he's performing today, this evening. But even at that, you don't associate with that son of a bitch at all. At all. And to me, those who did, yeah, you got to call them into question. They ain't going to do nothing. I'm quite sure they got paid. And to many performers, that's the objective. You know, shit, some people say, I perform at a bar mitzvah. if it paid good, you know, so. Because we live in America, family, the land of individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Man, I tell you. And so there was a conference in the 80s, I believe, on the Exodus, where everybody came, just like they had a conference in 74 in Cairo, or who were the ancient Kemetic people. And that's why I say you must understand something. When you talk about Kemet, don't use no damn Egypt. Egypt is what it happened. Egypt is what happened after the dynasties, after the Kemetic people lost out. That's what Egypt is. Don't use Egypt. Egypt is a Greek word. It's after the Greeks came and studied in Kemet. Greeks studied in Kemet. They sat at our feet. Socrates went back and was trying to teach them, and they said, oh, no, what are you bringing these foreign concepts in here? And they killed him, made him drink hemlock. Plato saw what was happening. He vanished into Kemet and came back, this so-called great philosopher, as well as Aristotle, who was a philosopher at the time of Alexander, the so-called great, when Greece developed its prominence after ripping off all the stuff. All the architecture in Greece comes out of Kemet. Don't use the word. Well, now, brothers and sisters, when you see Egypt, if the era is before the Greeks, say Kemet. If the era is the Greek and beyond, then you can say Egypt, because it's just like the son of a bitches on Facebook trying to make themselves appearance themselves and take classical Kemet as opposed to contemporary Egypt. So you want to say you're Egyptian? Fine, you're Egyptian. But you ain't Kemetic. You're not a Kemite. That's what needs to be done. And so that's what Sheikh Ahmed Najjar proved in 1974 at the symposium in Cairo. Him and Dr. Theophilia Obinga, a linguistic, they were the only two brothers at the symposium and the only two who were ready to deal. Nobody else had shit. And he dusted their ass. And probably the most profound was the melanin dosage test. And for many years, they denied him access to the mummies. It's just like that Caucasian in his one piece. You know, you could see he was very distraught. They whipped the melanin dosage test on some mummies that he had found and saw that they were African, saw that they were deeply melanated. No. Mm-mm. And so at the symposium, I don't remember the year that it was, talking about the Exodus, did it really happen? The conclusion, it didn't happen. It is a story like all the other stories in the Bible. All other stories. There are many stories within life, in humanity, in cultures. There are many stories. Probably the Europeans really didn't have a glorious, true history, so they made up shit. They made it up. And they perpetuated it so deeply that many of us believe that it happened. Many of us believed that there was a knight of King Arthur and his round table. We believed that there was William Tell and shooting the apple of his son's head and Robin Hood. That these people are historical. No, they are not. Just like the Exodus is not historical. Noah is not historical. These things in the Bible, no, the Bible is not the infallible word of God. That is our problem, family. That's why we can't unify. That's why Malcolm said, keep your religion at home. Keep that shit in the closet. Keep it at home. When you come to the table of brotherhood, of us as a people, you come here objectively. You come here willing to do whatever it takes to unify. It didn't happen. But you know what? The Exodus must happen. The Exodus must happen. Just like when you see the movie, I don't know whether I've seen Exodus with Christian Bale. Don't remember too much of it. I remember there was a little boy in the movie. That kind is as opposed to the burning bush. Might have been a burning bush in there too somewhere. What kind of like talks to Moses. You know, kind of keeps him on the one. And of course, you know, where they didn't show the whelps and the other disfigurements, you know, they hardly showed that in the Moses, in the Ten Commandments movie. It was just implied. You know, they showed, of course, the Nile turning red. You know, that was a, you know, very visual thing where the Pharaoh was about to drink and he, you know, he's pouring out and, you know, it's red. You know. It's implied about the plagues, the locusts and all that stuff. It didn't happen. Ramesses II was such a, based upon how it looks and what he did after taking over for his father, Seti I, he was an egomaniac. He built on a grand scale. You look at Abu Simbel, and even though where you, listen to this. Where you see Abu Simbel today in Aswan, they were going to create the Aswan Dam. Abu Simbel was not where it is today. They cut that piece up and moved it into the side of the mountains. Abu Simbel was not there where it is today. And where it was, twice a year, the sun would be in a position to illuminate, go all the way into that inner sanctum, to that sanctuary, and illuminate the Holy of Holies. That's how they built it perfectly at that time. It can't do it today because it's not where it was. But they cut it up. And I used to always argue, is that the engineering feat of all these architects and craftsmen coming together across the world, coming together into Kemet or in Aswan or in Nubia, because that's where the Nubian people live, and carve up, you know, to like a jigsaw puzzle and then put it back together again in that side of a mountain? I would venture to say yes. Yes, it is. But also, when it was built, they had the tools to do what they did. They had the modern technology to do what they did. But at the time that it was built, and the fact that it was perfect, in that you could have the sun twice a year, to be in a position to illuminate the Holy of Holies. To me, that's the engineering feat. And so all of these things that happened and all the things that have happened to us, no, there were no Hebrews. There were no Hebrews. In fact, they were African. And so when you see everybody in the movie, except for when he goes down, when Moses goes down to Cush and he comes back with treasures, and my man Woody Strode is in that scene. Woody Strode is up front, and then the sister, and then she tells Seti about how generous this prince of Egypt is, you know. And of course Ann Baxter gets jealous, you know, and they dance and they put out a treasure. They just jewels and everything. Didn't happen, family. It did not happen. There were no peoples. The temples and tombs and pyramids were not built by slaves. They didn't have to have people slaving. They were built by the people themselves. I'm going to say it to you again. Go to YouTube. Great Pyramid K 2019. Take the time. Yes, I know it's 3.5 hours long. Take the time. A little bit here, a little bit there. If you can't sit down like I have a couple of times and watch it in its entirety. It tells you how they were built and who built them. The person who developed the documentary, he tells you they were African. They were melanated. He tells you. He shows you. No, there were no Hebrews mixing straw and mud to make bricks. No. It was sandstone and lime, caustic soda mixture together to make stone. And why it's perfect? Because it was poured. It wasn't sculpted. They had copper tools. They can't cut stone with copper damn tools. You know that. Your right mind knows that. Copper bends. Those stones were cut perfectly. Why? Because they were molded. They were poured. And they took the mold off as it was hardening. And it was put in place right where it is. That's why some of those stones are 10 tons. That's 20,000 pounds. 1 ton is 2,000 pounds. 1 ton is 5 tons is 10,000 pounds. 10 tons is 20,000 pounds. They couldn't have gone down river, because the Nile flows from south to north and go against the current and go down river to quarries and cut stone with copper tools and then put them on a barge and then sail them up river from south to north and then drag them off there and then put them on. No, stop it. And no, they were not built by aliens. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. The Exodus did not happen, but it must happen. How much time we got? Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to take another break. Let me take a break. Okay, family? I'm going to try to do something here. Yeah. Since I'm talking about it, might as well try to do something. You know. I tell you, okay. We're gonna play this, family. Hope you Yeah. Let's do this. Okay, come on now. Help me out here. There we go. We're gonna help me out here. That's right. You're gonna help me out here. Thank you. Okay, family. Bob Marley and the Wailers, Exodus for the people.
Thank you. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Bob Marley and the Wailers, Exodus. Exodus. It didn't happen historically in Kemet. It didn't happen. But it must happen for us as African people. If we are going to survive, if we're going to be a people who are independent, who are self-determining, who are liberated, who are sovereign, that's what we seek. The model of this program, African Perspectives, is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. We got some callers. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215 490-9832. Good afternoon, dear brother. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, Oshie?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
I can tell you are, man. You know, yeah. we must have grown up pretty much at the same time in different places. Because a lot of times when you talk, you speak of things that I have often thought of.
Yes, for sure.
And that's not a coincidence. I don't think
right.
that's a coincidence.
Not at all.
People so distant have similar thought patterns, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can correct me if I'm in error in this, but it's been since I was in my teens
yes.
that I realized we would live in someplace else.
Right on.
That
yes.
this place was mm-hmm. not designed for us to operate yeah. in. Like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we read about slavery and don't recognize that we are in slavery. We may not be slaves,
mm-hmm.
but this whole system is
right.
slavery.
Yeah.
It has never been anything other than that.
Especially for us. But even though for the general population as well. You're right. Because
that's
of the deep divisions.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Even white folk.
That's right. I agree.
They are in a form of slavery. They're just in a degree where they have a little more access to things.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that they have access to continue to keep them in slavery. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not spiritual like we are. Our people are born spiritual.
That's right. That's right.
And so we think of, that's all, even when we don't recognize it, it's still part of our being. And white, that's the major difference between us and Caucasians. Mm. Is they can only be taught to recognize spiritual by people who already have it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And then it's up to them to accept it or not. But then it's certainly not up to them whether we accept it, because that's part of our nature. And so we see things that way. And I listen to you a lot of times. You know, I used to work in radio in D.C. and WOL, you know.
Mm-hmm. WOL, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's changed over the years, you know. I grew up listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being 10, 11 years old, man, listening to people like Sonny Jim Kelsey, you know. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, cut that radio off. And I'd stick it under my pillow, you know. And, but I'm just saying radio has been very important to me over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very refreshing to know that there are people who I've never seen,
mm-hmm.
who think just like I do.
That's right.
You know, which means that, you know, we're exposed, on the show.
Right, we're exposed to the same things. We're exposed to the same information, the same individuals. And it touched us, and so therefore we continue to seek it, you know? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And, you know, it makes, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but it makes us exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that, and not everybody needs to have exceptional mentality. But there are some people who are just born with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just tell it's just been different. You know, mm-hmm. and I know, all our lives, we've been different from most people.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a fact. Sure. It don't mean we're better or worse.
No.
But we're certainly different.
Mm-hmm. We think independently. We think outside of the imposed boundaries that these folks have on us. You know, we think independently. We think. You know, African-centered, you know, that's how I think. I'm thinking about what is best for us as a collective people, because that's the thought process that has impacted me for these many years, for at least about 50, yes. 60 years, man. 50 years at
yes,
least.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, OC, that I can only speak for myself, but I really want to leave. I don't want to die on this soil. I want to be like W.B. Du Bois.
Yeah.
You know, I want to die if I'm going to die one day.
Right.
But I don't want to die on this soil.
That's right.
I want to be someplace where my ancestors were, and they weren't here.
Right on, brother. I've said it so many times.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, if for some unfortunate reason that I'm still here and I expire or I perish, I give explicit instructions to my daughters and to my grandsons. You know, cremate me. There's a brother, Bamani. I mention him all the time. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give the shit to him. Mm. Have him, when he goes to Ghana, when he goes to wherever he's going to go on the continent, sprinkle me. You know,
because yes,
I do not want to be buried here. I do not want to be buried here, you know.
Mm-mm. I hear you. I would like to get that information because it's I don't know the best way to do it. I mean, my number is there, my phone number,
mm-hmm.
and if you get the time, if you can just call and give me that info, I would really like to put myself on that list.
Right on, Rick. I sure will, brother.
Because you know, because mm-hmm. I've often thought about that. Man, I would just rather, since I can't live where I need to be, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to live hereafter where I need to be.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yes, sir. But continue on, brother. I enjoy
your program.
It.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, man. Definitely appreciate you. Peace.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brother Rick. All right. My sister, Sister Hayiba.
Hey.
How was
got
that?
It right.
How was that pronunciation, Sister Hayiba?
Oh, it was so perfect.
How you doing, dear sister? How you doing?
I'm blessed and enjoying the program. And just giving salutations, ashes, shout-out, tribute to Dr. Brother and Sister Martin Luther King.
Ashe.
You know, I tend to, I just grow in loving more and more as I've gotten older. Mm-hmm. You know, and just being exposed to all his great works that he does. And he was becoming more and more revolutionary.
Sure.
Time. I mean,
sure. He was. I made mention of that today, even though I did play his last speech in Memphis, Tennessee, you know, he told Harold Belafonte the same thing. I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. This shit ain't going to work. This is right. not going to work for us. And so he really became a threat to this system when he started talking about the Poor People's Campaign. When he started talking about Vietnam and so forth. But he was fine when he was integrating lunch counters. He was fine when he was having you have opportunity to sit on the same toilet seat the crackers sit on. He was fine then. But when he started doing that, we got to get rid of him. In fact, they called him public enemy number one.
Isn't that
That's a damn shame.
And he said, I'm not fearing no man.
That's right.
And, you know, he said, I come to collect my check.
Yep.
I mean, he was just, he was amazing. And,
yeah.
you know, and he always talked about how he loved his people, too, and how beautiful we were. He said, black is so beautiful. He said, you all have been brainwashed to think that anything dark and black is bad. But he said, it is beautiful.
I say.
And so, you know, I just love him. He was great.
All right, sister.
He was really good. And, you know, we were talking earlier about what was you spoke earlier about Snoop Dogg, how he was selling out and things. I was listening to Barbara Obatachaka, and he was saying, you know, that they had integrity. Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, they had integrity. They were being offered to sell out. We give you I was told that they were offered each like $1 million, and they were saying no. You know, they wouldn't sell out.
No, like they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. You when the cracker came to Malcolm's house, he had a tape recorder under the couch. And they offered them this. They offered them that. Would you give us the list? No. Would you do this against the Elijah Muhammad? No. He wouldn't sell out. That's why I admired him so.
Yes.
You know? That's why I have such high respect for him. He had integrity. That's why he challenged. That's why when he found out about what's happening with Elijah Muhammad and these young ladies who he had, you know, impregnated, he had to go to him and find out. And of course, he was exposed. And then, of course, allegedly, the thing that got him out was that when Kennedy was assassinated, he was saying that, you know, the violence that America has perpetuated consistently over all over this damn planet. You know, the chickens were coming home to roost. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing was, I don't know if you had heard, we talked about old tired Trump. I'm so tired of Trump. I'm just.
Yeah,
you know,
it's sickening. It is. It's sickening.
But you had mentioned you were talking about him in the FBI files, and I had heard yesterday that Trump had made an announcement that he's going to be releasing the FBI files, including what happened to the assassination of Martin Luther King, along with John F. Kennedy. And he said, "I'm going to get y'all. I'm going to be letting people see how
let me say this.
The FBI."
Yeah. Let me say this, sweetheart. Let me say this. I don't mean to say that, sister.
It's okay.
But let me say this. Let me say this. Whether they do it or not, it's just like just recently I've been getting a lot of tidbits off of Instagram, I think it is, or whatever, on the 9/11, which I've been talking about for, you know, since the shit happened, that it was an inside job. And now they're coming back with all this other additional information about it and so forth on my feed. They're little blurbs, but. You know, it's what I've been saying, you know, that substantiates that. And it's there for all of us. But you know what? To many, it don't make no difference. So what? It don't make no difference. Because as long as crackers run it, as long as they rule it, the people will go along with it. My contention is, let us not go along with it. That's what I'm saying. We have to have an exodus. We have to get the hell out of here. This is not their insanity, their madness is not ours. It is not ours. And we have a continent, along with brothers and sisters that are there, that is ours. the resources that are limitless. They have been plundering Africa for over 300-400 damn years, and yet still today, there's still more resources there than in any other place on this planet. There's still more gold there. There's still more uranium. Still more whatever it is that is necessary. There's still more cobalt and titanium there than anywhere. It is ours. We have to go there and build. Build cities. Build infrastructure. Build highways, schools, hospitals. Connect the continent. Develop defense. Because once we make, sister, you know it. Once we make that move, we're going to have to defend it.
Yeah.
It ain't just talking about it. We have to defend it. That's why Ibrahim, the brother, he's great, ain't he? I love him.
I pray for him.
Ibrahim Touré, I pray for him. But he got a gun on his side at all times. But let me catch some other callers because I know I'm about to run out of time.
Oh, is it about time? Okay. Yeah. All right, then. Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Oh, you too, dear sister. Peace to you. Hey, what's up, Brother Jay?
I think everything is pretty good. I'm just calling to do a wellness check on Irv. And you,
I know, man.
That's about it.
Hold up. Let me get him in here, man. Hold up. Brother Irv, you all right, dear brother?
I'm on my way to the therapist, the NFL therapist office right now. I can't talk on the phone while I'm driving. I don't want to run into a Bills fan. I ran one over.
don't drop the ball, please.
Don't drop the ball like Jackson did, huh?
They always say that the black man will let you down. But the white man proved it yesterday that he's the culprit of it all. But listen, it was a very decent game. I think that Baltimore should have won it and would have won it if it made it to overtime. And I just want to say that Lamar Jackson is, I don't care what nobody say, the best quarterback in the NFL.
He is, man. Lamar Jackson is cold.
I agree.
Man, Lamar Jackson is cold.
He has proved it with yesterday's display and poise. He's just going to get better and better, man.
Well,
you know?
I think one of the things, and I was, how good their defense had been playing. And unfortunately, even though, Buffalo did not rack up the, they couldn't stop him a few times. But – you know what? To me, they'll come back stronger next year. And I think next year will be their year. They'll have the best record in the American Conference. So they'll have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Like, same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, honestly, I don't have no feeling for the Bills. So I'm pulling for Kansas City.
Oh, well, That's my team.
Yeah, I'm playing for Kansas City.
What disappointed me the most, to be honest, was Detroit. I don't know what happened to Detroit, but for them to lose that game, it was shocking, man. Even though Washington played a very good game, you got to give Washington credit. But Detroit, they totally surprised me, man. I thought they was gonna come out there and started the game off that way.
I think what's surprising to me in that situation, obviously Jaden Daniels. He is not he's so poised, he's very accurate. But really the Detroit defense, which has been outstanding, the week prior, they totally shut down Minnesota. You know, and Aaron Glenn was getting all kind of props, but not against Jaden Daniels. They ran on him. They passed on him. They didn't even sack him one time. You know, and then of course their defense intercepted what's his name 3 times and got a fumble, and he had never been intercepted. Jared Goff had a record of not being intercepted in all those playoff wins. Listen, I'm coming up on the end. Brother Irv, you got something to say about what we're talking about? Because, you know, Jay has a habit of that shit. He come in and he'll change the subject on your ass.
I know you. No,
I didn't need to do that.
No, I hear Jay. Just okay, Jay.
So much about Irv.
Yeah.
You know, I know how it feels.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't.
Oh, no, you, right. Yeah. I know how it feels. But
no,
listen.
It's entertaining. It's fantastic. It takes us off the beaten path and gives us some something to laugh about, something to talk about.
Right.
And you know, they paid me $2. I ain't made a dime off the game. I get that. It was fun to watch and it was good to talk about. But the reality is, I'm waiting for the Lamar Jacksons of the world to say when we retire, we're going to start a league. We're going to start a camp for young men to learn how to be owners.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where's that? I mean, not players. I play football, but when are we going to be owners? When are we going to stop with the distraction of the sport itself? Because it reminds me of in Roman days when they had gladiators, so that the people wouldn't realize how poor they were. They sat there and watched the Christians get eaten by the lions.
Exactly. Are you not entertained? Shit.
Hey, right quick on that note. Did you hear that Maverick Carter, LeBron's boy, brother, you know, right-hand man, is trying to start an international league?
Excellent. Just the mere fact that is in the air. Arugu is now circling his wagon as to how to take it or to weaponize it against them. And that's how Arugu works.
You know, they had an opportunity. About 20-some years ago, they had an opportunity. The owners locked the players out because the owners were losing money and the players were getting so much money. And so they locked the players out to make them come to their demand. They really weren't losing no damn money, but they wanted to have more control. Instead of the players saying, you know, to hell with y'all, we're the game. And those players come together. And even if you had to play on BET, you didn't get ABC or CBS or NBC or ESPN. Even if you had to do that, and even if you had to have to play in smaller venues, you would have been in control. But they acquiesced to the owners, their demands, and so forth. And, of course, they still on that plantation. But listen, man, it's 1 o'clock, man. And I just want to say this. I appreciate y'all. And I hope y'all and I hope the listeners understand that I'm serious about Exodus. We must develop a mechanism where we can get the hell up out of here. This place is not good. It continuously, especially now with this election of this asshole and all the people that support him, all the rich people that support him, all the poor crackers who support him. This is madness. This is insane. And we have to get out of this insanity. It ain't for us. It ain't for us, family. So I appreciate y'all, Jay and Irv. Era, I'm going to give you a call, brother. Okay?
All right. Yes, sir.
All right, family. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor are the minds of the oppressed. But not just the M-I-N-D. But the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day on this Dr. King Day. Don't turn on that damn inaugural bull. Look at him have some terrible ratings, because you know how he loves to lie, because he's such a narcissistic asshole. So Shemhotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, believe we will be victorious. Take care, family. See you on Wednesday. Peace.